Today's guest needs no introduction. It is the legendary Dr. Frederik Schoyens in Belgium. He graduated from medical school in 1977 and did his homeopathic training in 1978. In 1981, Dr. Schoyens was the constitutive president for VSU, the largest homeopathic school in Belgium. Dr. Schoyens was one of the first radar users in 1986 and became enthusiastic about the increasing possibilities computer science offers to homeopathy. Because of this dedication to the program, he became the homeopathic coordinator for the radar project. Dr. Schoyens published an introduction to homeopathy in 1984 in Dutch, which has been translated into French and Portuguese. In 1993, he edited the printed version of the Synthesis Repertory, the expanded repertory linked to the Radar Project. A computer version of Synthesis exists in 7 languages. This repertory has also been printed in German, English, Dutch, Italian, Spanish, and Portuguese, and more translations are still ongoing. Since 1995, Dr. Schoyens has published several books based on Synthesis, such as 1001 Small Remedies. Dr. Schoyens lectures on radar software and homeopathy in Europe as well as in North and South America and India. If you'd like to learn more about the fascinating history and development of the radar software, listen to episode 121 of this podcast. Personally, I have been using Radar Opus for my repertorization in my clinic solely since 2011, and I could not have my practice without this software. So I am hugely indebted to the Radar team for the incredible work that they've done over the years. If you would like to try the Radar Opus software for yourself, visit www.radaropus.com. That's RADAROPUS.com. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we have one of the living greats on the Homeopathy Hangout show today. I'm stumbling over my words already. I'm so starstruck. The incredible Dr. Frederik Schoyens. Welcome to the show, Frederik.
Hello, Eugenie.
I feel like I know you already because I've watched so many of your lectures and videos, and I've used Radar Opus since 2011. So you are an absolute god in the homeopathic world in my book. So just thank you with all of my heart for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And you've got a really interesting topic for us today, choosing your homeopath. Now, for our listeners, this is going to be on YouTube and Rumble as well. And Frederik has prepared a PowerPoint for us. I wonder, Frederik, are you okay to give us a quick rundown of how you were first introduced to homeopathy before you go into the PowerPoint?
Yeah, I can tell that short or long story. I'll make it short. So I was at university in 1970, so the end of the 60s, you know what that means. So everybody was experimenting and knowing and reading and lecturing and communicating about anything. It was like the big discovery of everything. And one of those discoveries on some lectures was alternative medicine. I delved into it. I found it very interesting. I was in studying medicine at the time, but I was really intrigued by these alternative approaches. And one day I found homeopathy as well, and then just decided to study this, and as the first one of many, but I never got to the second one. I remained on homeopathy because I felt it was so powerful.
It really is. And you've had a general practice as well, right? As a general GP, because I think over there you train as a medical doctor. Yes. As well as.
Yeah, yeah. So immediately when I finished my studies, I had to go to the army. Okay. Where I started practicing homeopathy for the military and their families. And ever since I've been practicing homeopathy, let's say full time.
I didn't know that. So you were supporting their families as well.
I was in a caserne in Germany and I started to treat a few people, and it was like a close community because this was Belgians living in Germany. And one word went to the other, and I was then just... After a short time, I had to stay there, I think, 6 months. I was having consultations from the morning till the evening.
Incredible. And that was before Radar Opus. So there was still lots of repertorization.
Before everything. This was the manual time. I made repertorizations by hand. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, just thank you from the bottom of my heart for Radar Opus. I don't know what I would do without it. I think I would have quit homeopathy if I had to do it by hand.
Yeah. There was a very pleasant and interesting time in the authority, the captain and the major. They let me do whatever I did. They were very supportive, in fact, and I treated the captain and his wife as well. So it was really a fantastic time in the army.
I hope you write a book about that one day, if you haven't already.
So, I will consider.
Talk to us a bit about choosing your homeopath and why that's important. I'll leave the floor to you.
Yes. So this topic is there because long ago when I was young, I stumbled upon this lecture by Hahnemann with exactly this title. Choosing your homeopath. And I found it quite an intriguing idea to say something about this topic. And in fact, I've always been wishing to lecture about it, about this point, exactly this question, because it's a question that many people are wondering about, including patients of mine, moved to France, to Spain, whatever. And then they ask me, what shall I do now? How do I find a homeopath? How do I choose one? What, et cetera, et cetera. So even if this goes back to a desire of long ago, I'm grateful I can finally deliver this lecture. It is, I think, also even today, a very interesting topic for many people. And so I'll start with a little history. So there is, of course, we know the Organon, which is like the main book where Hahnemann summarized his experiences, and we call it his philosophy. It's basically the summary of his experiences. And as you may know, he published that between 1810 and 1833, fifth edition, and even a sixth edition in 1842. So this is just history. But on top of that, there is this guy that you're seeing here, Stapf Ernst, German guy, who collected already in 1829, 11 articles and 14 letters by Hahnemann into a little booklet, which is called The Small Medical Writings. And I have at my disposition the French translation of Jourdan, where I find, again, this article, you see, Etude, Study of Homeopathic Medicine, for those who follow the fifth edition of the Organon, okay? And there is this famous letter. It's just a letter by Hahnemann, and he entitled it The Choice of the Doctor. And then someone is writing, Mon cher docteur, my dear Dr. Hahnemann, as I am far away from you, I don't know to which doctor I must address me, and a whole story, a letter, a request written by a prince this time. You see, it's a prince who wrote this letter to Hahnemann, has been treated by him. And then followed by the reply of Hahnemann, Mon cher prince, which means my dear prince, etc., etc. So I was, as you may be, very curious to know what Hahnemann would reply to this person. And Hahnemann's reply is in fact 7 pages long. And he starts by saying, it is impossible to judge a homeopath unless you're a homeopath yourself. So you got to know your stuff. The baker knows about the bread better than anyone else. It's, you know, the professional. But of course, most of us who ask this question are not homeopaths. And then he says, what I will do is I will describe 3 types of doctor of homeopaths. And I will describe them following external signs. External signs is literally what is written there, the behavior. So I got even more curious. And then he speaks about this type A, where a homeopath is having this distinguished behavior and focused with his attention to distinguished people, shows not too much emotions and is like into society and his position and how he's considered in society. So obviously Hahnemann is saying in his letter, this is not the perfect homeopath or doctor, okay? And then he describes type B, which is very different. It's someone who starts working 7 a.m., sees a lot of patients, runs through the city, etc., has not much time, in fact, almost no time for stories to reply to the patients. The waiting room is very full. And maybe just because of that, he's highly reputed. Hanuman again says, well, this is not the guy you should trust. And then at last, he gives a third type, describes a third type, external signs behavior, who's very delicate with ladies, but also slanders about others, colleagues, patients, who's flattering when he comes into your house, he praises the furniture and is boasting. And so a different type. And Hanuman says, I could go on describing types, but let me give you the positive characteristics. And Hanuman says, yes, the person you're looking for is modest and has common sense. It's just like you can speak to that person. And he's conscientious when he studies, he's conscientious when he's teaching. And when you ask a question, the reply is clear. It is not vague, it's to the point. You see what I mean? And most of all, there are no unsolicited statements. It's just about what you need, what you're asking. The ideal homeopath is not irritable, impatient, brutal, etc. There is no contempt, whoever the patient is, whatever the patient does, whatever the patient says. It makes me think of sometimes our patients come in with those very strange symptoms. Even me, after these 45 years of experience, every now and then I hear a patient coming in saying something which I almost cannot believe. What is my reaction? To say, oh, contempt or disagreement or disbelief? No, I check it in the repertory, okay, whether someone else reported this before, and we may have an interesting clue to the remedy. So Hanuman says most often we prescribe one remedy and also consider the idea, the behavior when confronted with poor people, with people with financial problems. So I read this article and then I said, yeah, but most of what he is saying is, which was normal at the time, is when you meet this would-be, your would-be homeopath in like a social environment where you drink tea and coffee together in a coffee house, in a whatever. This is not easy for a patient to know all this beforehand. And so I have taken a little bit a different approach and was thinking, what can we say? What can we do to know this is a person who's going to help me? And so I will now continue on this first idea of Hanuman with some more ideas. And the first idea is, what can you do to know about the homeopath before the consultation, before you even go there, you see? And our big friends there are the pharmacists. And so I suggest to my patients to go to the pharmacy who sells homeopathic remedies. And in every town, most of the towns, maybe not every country in the world yet, but let's say many, many countries, the pharmacist can tell you, oh, it's the other pharmacy he's selling. They know from each other. So you'll end up finding a pharmacy who is dispensing remedies. And the one question I suggest that is asked is, do you know a homeopath who is prescribing one remedy? So this may be obvious for some people, while at the same time, some more people may say, well, does it need to be one remedy? I mean, why this criterion? And even Hanuman has been prescribing two remedies and stuff like this. Why? Well, okay, yes. Let's start with the old man and going back to the Organon with paragraph 272. There is this clear statement that in no case more than one remedy is required. So it's a very clear statement. So even if Hanuman indeed made some experiments, and you know, it was all about experiments with Hanuman. His whole philosophy was not just philosophy because of thinking, it was philosophy because of the result of experimenting. And so as a result of his experience, he very clearly writes in several places of his writings, also in this last edition of the Organon, this paragraph, one remedy. Nevertheless, it is true, it's absolutely true, that since Hanuman, homeopathy has evolved in many schools, many approaches, many strategies, prescribing strategies, etc. And that even we could divide types of homeopathy into three areas, which is the unicist, pluralist, and complex homeopathy. And this means unicist is like you give one remedy at a time. Pluralist, they would give several remedies in a quick alternation, like in the morning this, in the afternoon this, and the next morning this, and the evening this, etc., and maybe a different one on Sunday. So it's several remedies in quick alternation. I emphasize quick because you may say, yeah, but my unicist homeopath prescribed me pulsatile, and now 6 months later prescribed me ciclan, and is not always one remedy. Yeah, but this is a difference. Pluralist is quick alternation, okay? And then at last, complex homeopathy, where several remedies are put into one bottle altogether. Now, I would like to explain a little bit more about this. I will start from bottom upwards about complex homeopathy. Complex homeopathy is mostly disease related. And some of these complexes, they carry names, or it is just written on the bottle, on the little box. What are they for? And it's a disease, it's diarrhea, it's a complex for migraine. And you take this angina sit, it's angina, it's for your sore throat, to give an example. And this, in a way, is not really the homeopathic approach, is because we don't treat the disease, we treat the patient. And this is not an abstract saying, this is an essential reflection of how we think. And what is the way we think? Well, if someone comes with a disease, obviously, yes, a sore throat, and the next person comes with a sore throat, yeah, they come with a disease and the disease should be cured. But our approach is to individualize those persons. And whereas a classical doctor may prescribe the same antibiotic, amoxicillin, whatever, for the sore throat in successive sore throat patients, we may see on the same day several patients with a sore throat and prescribe different remedies. So individualization is, for example, what Bönninghausen, who lived at the time of Hahnemann, is stating here. We need to know what the patient has, a sore throat, a pain, a stitching, a burning, where it is. And then it's modified by what we call those modalities, and modified by cold drinks, by a warm scarf, whatever. And this has been going on in the same way, like if we look at Kent, which is an American homeopath past century. And then he says, what we need to know is the complaint and also the description. And there is an eruption and it's burning. And there is an eruption and it's itching. And he specified a little bit more in detail the localization, and also the sides are important, left side sore throat, right side sore throat, extension, pain in the eye to going to the occiput, whatever. And modalities is split of times, because as in acupuncture, times can be very important to know the remedy. So you begin to see what is meant by individualization and how important it is in the whole homeopathic story. We're not speaking about like a headache. We're speaking about a headache, exactly where, exactly when, and better and worse from what, okay? Then some people will say, yeah, okay, you have nice ways to convince me of different remedies, but we put them in a complex, and the complex is the sum of the remedies. It's just more easy. There are some remarks about it. So first of all, it is definitely true that complex have some effects. So some people, they will get better by taking complexes. But there is a logical problem. For example, we have a remedy where the headache is increased at 10 a.m., starts at 10 a.m. and lasts for a few hours, Natrum-Ur. And we put it in the complex for headache. Then we have another remedy, which, among others, has a specific aggravation at 16 hours, your say 4 p.m. for a few hours again, that's like a podium, and we put it in the complex of the headache. And now, with a few other remedies and for other reasons, whatever, that headache complex is taken by the person who has the headache starting at 10 a.m. Will that remedy work? Or what happens with the remedy which has the aggravation of 4 p.m.? Or what happens if the person has no time-wise aggravation at all? So there is some, what happens is really the question when you put all those remedies we say, and some of them have tens of thousands of symptoms. What happens when you put them all into one bottle? And then in my experience, and I guess repeated by other homeopaths' experience, you have these patients come to you and they have taken complexes for headache. Why not? And then I prescribe Natriumure as a single remedy. And they may say, oh, yeah, but this complex didn't really help and Natriumure was in it. So why will Natriumure help? Because I've been taking it already for a year. I've been trying complex with it. Well, wait a minute. The experience is, even if Natriumure is in the complex, that giving Natriumure alone will help the patient if it's indicated. So it seems that the remedies in the complex is not adding. It's almost like some confusion or you're not sure that the remedy is acting. And what is a little worse and maybe at times even frustrating for the classical homeopath is that you're treating someone with a single remedy and then they come back and they say they got worse again because they had a flu or they had whatever, and they took a complex. And the action of your single remedy has been blocked. Yeah, I had an interesting case of a lady who was coming for migraine headaches and said, I was better, and then she was not better anymore. And when we delve into the story, it appeared she had a leucorrhea. And she just took a complex for the leucorrhea and suppressed it. And then the headache started coming back. Why did she do it? Because she said, I'm going to the homeopath to me for my migraine. And this leucorrhea, I know I can suppress it with my complex. So it was like two stories. No, there are no two stories. There's only one story. You see, there's only one health story in a patient. And after all, isn't it true that if a patient is given more or less the same complex for abdominal pain, that we are like behaving like regular doctors, regular medicine, but instead of prescribing Buscopan, we give complex 10 or whatever the name is. So for me, complex homeopathy is like using homeopathic substances in an allopathic frame of mind. So I apologize to the colleagues who like to do this, and even to the patients, because I can say that I started my homeopathic career as a complex homeopath. But then one day when I was completely in a mess with colds and sore throat and sinusitis, etc., I went to see this one person in Brussels, a reputed homeopath from Paris, and I told my whole story. I had a schedule of what I was taking in the morning, in the evening, on the Monday, on the Sunday, etc., etc. And he just said, okay, he said, I will prescribe you now one remedy. We'll start with the homeopathic treatment now. I said, oh.
Interesting.
And then it succeeded. Then it opened my eyes. Okay.
Very interesting. So you went more from the complexes to the single remedies.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. He was a single remedy prescriber and saved me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the time. And convinced me. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So the other approach is the pluralist approach, and there is basically a big problem of navigation. I'm going to try and explain this problem with a very short and small example. So suppose you have a patient with these four symptoms: stomach pain, diarrhea, sleeplessness, and headache from a draft, okay? And you say you take this remedy in the morning, this remedy in the evening, and after 1 month, you come back to me. Even just only two remedies, okay? This patient comes back after 1 month and tells you, oh, my stomach one is better. So my question to you is, what will you do? What will you decide? Will you say, okay, I change remedy one, or I put a third remedy, or I drop remedy two, or... Where is the logic? Because you know that if we look at most of the often used remedies, they have thousands and thousands of symptoms. So pain stomach after eating maybe is a characteristic of both of those remedies. So when this is the one symptom that has improved, what is your conclusion? And how do you evaluate the fact that the other symptoms have not yet improved? So there is a big problem of navigation. And so I would like to explain a little bit about evaluation. And evaluation of a prescription is a critical point in the strategy in treating a patient. And it should be done not just on one symptom, not just on a few symptoms. It should be done on the totality of the case. And with totality of the case, we mean the locals and the generals and the mentals. So we have collected that information and we review it when the patient comes back. And we review it mainly with just two questions. Only two questions need to be replied in every follow-up. Is this patient going in the right direction, the direction of cure, and is it at an acceptable speed? The one question is, of course, to know whether the remedy is correct. The second question is to know whether the dosage needs to be adapted. Okay? So in homeopathy, and there is what we call the law of cure, which was formulated by Constantine Hering, United States homeopath, and which describes in these four very easy ideas what defines the direction of cure. So symptoms go in reverse order. The symptoms you developed most recently, the diseases, are the ones that are cured first. We go down the road to history. Or another way to look at it, is it the vital or the less vital organ that is cured first? Because the cure means the remedy is first taking care of the most vital organ, and like heart and lungs are more vital than bowel, for example. Is the cure going from within without? Is it evolving from above downwards? So these, I will not go into detail, but these ideas express in a very interesting way whether your remedy is bringing the patient in the direction of cure. One thing many people, even colleagues, don't know is that there is a level of importance. The first law overrules the others. So the classical example is when someone developed eczema in several places of the body, we would like to see, according to rule number four, that first the eczema is healed on the face and then the chest, etc., downwards, you understand? When it does not happen, it may mean that it is the reverse order, that the eczema, for example, first appeared on the face and then later on the extremities, etc. And so then you will see that the cure is better defined by the first rule, which is reverse order of symptoms.
And to make more confusing, I just Colin Griffith's seminar, he was saying with the chakras, it heals from the bottom up. So that's, sometimes I feel that's very confusing, but that's very interesting that you say. So the reverse order of symptoms, that's actually the most important rule.
The reverse order, so time on the timeline.
On the timeline. Okay. So the most recent complaint will be the first thing to go.
Yes. That's definitely.
When you're assessing whether it's the right remedy or not, that is the one, that's the main key thing that you want to be looking at, that the most recent complaint is resolved first. Okay.
Yeah. So this is also, we can say it with a little laugh, but this is the way we rejuvenate people, because we bring them back to the balance they had when they were young.
Yeah.
You see? Okay. But you're right. It is not so easy. And I can say that when patients come in and they say, I'm better, I'm worse, that overall there's like 20% of mistakes. I'll just give one example. And someone comes in and says, no, I'm worse, nothing changes, still the same. And they start to speak about the digestive problems they have, et cetera, et cetera. So I note everything. But then totality of the symptoms. We got to go through the list. And then I say, oh, and what about the migraine? The migraine is gone, but it's just my problem is the bowels, you see. But they're focused on the bowels, and the bowels haven't moved yet. Mm. And so they say we're the same.
Mm.
Yeah. So it is based on the totalities. We know, no, you're improving, and just more patients will go on with the treatment. Okay. And this is another way, the more scientific way, almost to evaluate a patient, and we do it in the many of the research papers, is the ORIDL. In classical medicine, we have all these schemes to evaluate menopause, depression, etc., with long question lists and precise symptoms. Is this and this and this improved? This, for me, is the best scale by my friend David Riley. It's just saying, like in one word, better, worse, much better, much worse, cured. This is the result of a thorough and overall evaluation. And this is what I think we should do, because we're speaking about the patient. It's not about one disease. The patient comes with migraine, digestive problems, maybe some arthritis in the knee. It's not about the evolution of one disease. It's about the evaluation of the patient as a total.
Absolutely. That's actually a really good scale. That would be a good one to give to all your clients to kind of evaluate, you know, at the end of each consult, once you've gone through it all with them, and just so they can kind of evaluate themselves. Yeah, but I think you should do this at the end of a consultation, because they often come in and they say nothing's changed, and then you go through everything, and then they go, oh yeah, the migraine's gone, da da da. So then you should get them to do this ORIDL afterwards and see on the scale.
Yeah. It's the totality that is evaluated. And so then after complex and pluralistic homeopathy, we come to the unicist homeopathy, which is means one, prescribing one remedy, which is like the holistic approach. You've been hearing me speaking about the whole and totality, etc. already. And holistic is like a very contemporary word. And the dictionary, Merriam-Webster in this case, defines it as a medicine which attempts to treat both mind and body. Okay, holistic. And even if it is a contemporary word, there is a whole history that goes back to before Christ, because even Socrates, this is a quote from Socrates, said, a part can never be well unless the whole is well. Isn't that very nice worded? And Hippocrates also has been speaking, the father of medicine has been speaking in this direction, the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And so this holistic approach, basically, throughout the ages, the idea hasn't changed. Healing is most effective when you consider the whole person and not just one illness, one body part, or one symptom, or a few symptoms, okay? This is the whole idea. And what I would like to say is, according to me, homeopathy is holistic from the beginning. And just one way to show this is that the word whole is mentioned 7 times in this organon, in these paragraphs, in these few paragraphs, 7 times where Hahnemann is describing how to treat a skin eruption. And we know that is a challenging problem at times, but just a few phrases that he writes in those paragraphs, you can verify them. When you have a skin disease, you treat the whole, he says. So you don't start putting an ointment or whatever. No, you give the famous tablets or granules in the mouth because you treat the whole. And so it's an internal medicine. And when you do so, you will recover the whole and the eruption. This is the cure. And the general disease or unbalance, and maybe it's better to say energetic unbalance, whatever, will be brought into balance and the local skin eruption at the same time. Well, at the same time, maybe spread over 1 month, 3 months, but together it's one direction, one effort, you see. And he even states again, the local suffering is inseparable part of the whole. So it's clear to me that Hahnemann was very aware of this holistic idea of homeopathy and phrased it in a strong way, which means that he's ahead by stating it so strongly. Das Ganze is the word in German that he used. And if homeopath is holistic, it's about totality. It's about all the symptoms, all the disease, etc. We get back to this initial idea that I was saying to you. It's about one remedy, isn't it? Okay. Now, We've spoken to the pharmacist. We know about the one remedy. There is another hint I would like to give to you before you even need to go to the consultation. And this is, you can call the homeopath. You've got the name and the address. You can call him, her, and ask, how do you work? And there, basically, many replies may come, but I would say we're interested in 2 points. The first point is, what is the duration of the intake? And I would say it's minimum 1 hour. Mm. Today, I still schedule 1.5 hours for every new patient. Why? Because we want to know the whole history, the whole story. And if it's much less, then it means this homeopath is not taking the whole story. And when I initiated my homeopathy in the army, and then later on in my home practice, I took half a day for every new patient. And so the intake was 1-2 hours, maybe more, and then studying, etc. So I put almost no limit to the duration of the intake. And because this is another saying by Hahnemann, taking the case is the most important and difficult part of the job. So, yeah, just ask this. How long does the intake? What is the duration? And then the other thing is, what if I have an acute? And I apologize again, because I know quite a few homeopaths, they don't treat acutes. And I think it's a pity. It's a pity. It's a pity for several reasons, because patients for chronic ailments, they can even wait a week, a month, whatever, come back, etc. But if the child has 40 degrees, they need something needs to be done immediately. So if some of us put us in the luxury situation to only treat chronic and see the patients every 1, 2, 3 months, etc., we put the patients or some patients in despair, I'm afraid. Yeah. And also, if the child has 40 degrees and is coughing, etc., is it just a cough? Is it a virus? Is it a bronchitis? Is it the beginning of a pneumonia? We need to be there to treat it. One other reason, if the patient is coming to you for asthma, bronchitis, COPD, etc., and then suddenly starts a bronchitis, are you going to say, come back in 3 months, and in the meantime, you, if you have an acute bronchitis, you treat it by antibiotics? It makes no sense. The totality of the patient is means totality of chronic and includes all the acute stages. And at least, at last, in some of those difficult cases, which we all have, we may exactly get credit from our patients by treating the acutes. And because we're working, trying to get them out of the depression, it doesn't work very well. But then they have an acute, whatever, sore throat. We're able to help them without antibiotics. They're happy and they're motivated to continue and give us some more time to try and get the treatment of the depression on the road. Okay. So for me, these are two questions, easy questions you can ask and know whether you're on the right track. I'm sorry to say it like that.
I really like that question of asking what would you do in a case of an acute. I'd never thought to ask to get clients to ask that question, because that is a really valid concern. It's so important that you've brought that up. I think that's a really important question for our listeners to ask when they're thinking of engaging a homeopath, because you want to have the continuity. You don't want to be left in the lurch if something, you know, really acute has come up. You want to be able to know that you can still rely on that person. I don't understand why any homeopath would not want to do acutes. That's just odd. But
well, it happens. It happens, and I gently contradict it.
Yeah, good.
Okay. So let's just review a little bit here the different ideas to conclude. So when I revisit now Hahnemann's criteria, I rephrase them a little bit. Okay. So instead of a society thing, it becomes maybe something interesting after all. Coffee shop, etc. No. The homeopath should not be a dandy. He should be interested in all your symptoms, okay? And they should not be running as a workaholic and overworking. They should take time. And slander and boast and flatter. No, 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 no. This is not what you want to hear. This is not the communication you want to have. You must have a person who's modest. And then the contemporary rephrasing of no unsolicited statements is something which unnerves me every now and then. You're eating with 10 people at the table and someone is taking a lot of salt and they'll say, you're Nature Muir. Eh? Your remedy is Nature Muir, okay? Restaurant homeopathy. You say 2-3 things and they know your remedy. Well, no. We know the remedy after we have taken the case. And so making such statements in a restaurant or wherever based on very little information, I think, is not good. It shows you don't take the patient seriously or the potential patient even seriously, okay? And then just the other criteria I brought on is, well, basically, I would like to say these criteria come from what I understand that homeopathy is. And I hope I have emphasized and explained and motivated you to go along with me in this direction, that homeopathy is a holistic medicine and therefore we need one remedy matching that totality. And to find it, we need a 1-hour intake and to have the totality also in acute and chronic. This is the true holistic approach. And at that time, we will not be looking at homeopathy for a symptom, not for a disease, but homeopathy as a way to take care of your healthy life. And this is shown by the fact that now I have patients whom I have been treating for 20, 30, 40 years, and they're still with me. You see, still alive as well. But they're still with me. They made the choice. And not just for the sinusitis, what can homeopathy do for my sinusitis? No. How can homeopathy help me to have a healthy life? This is really the background of the whole idea. And you want to find a homeopath who goes along this path with you. That's my little lecture about the choosing the homeopath and in a way, the homeopathy, I think, that is relevant.
I love that, Frederick. It's very grounding. It gets us back to basics about what is actually important. And I think that's really grounding and very necessary. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us. Yes. I just have a question. Whenever I see somebody like you that's got 45 years experience, what is that like? I mean, that must be the most incredible gift to have these families that you've been working with for so many decades. And you've probably seen some children and maybe even some grandchildren.
Yes, indeed. Right.
It must be the hugest.
That is correct.
It must be the hugest gift.
Yes, yes. Those patients are mostly happy because this is why they have been coming back and back again. And I'm happy and proud that I've been able to take care of their health problems. And some of them came out of dark places and they had a really good life when they improved. And in fact, I ask patients to come back. I don't say, here is a remedy, bye-bye. No, I ask them to come back. Because I tell them, listen, we have ways in homeopathy to perceive orange lights. Don't wait until there is a red light. Come back every now and then. And I run through my list of previous complaints. I run through some characteristics, etc. And maybe I perceive, something is happening. Something is coming back. And we repeat the dose or we even change the remedy, whatever. But we try to react on orange lights. This is, for me, the ideal situation. Of course, the first step is to cure and alleviate whatever symptoms, diseases there are. But then to be in this preventive mode and try and keep the patient into balance again and check in. Out balance? No, go back. Stay there.
That's wonderful. And how lucky for your patients to have somebody there that's been with them such a long time. That's, you're the one constant in their life that they know that they can go to and they have that. So how lucky are your patients to have that consistency?
No. One thing I would like to say is what I hope by saying this is, of course, I know many of my colleagues will know most what I have said and most of my colleagues, homeopaths will know most of what I've said, and maybe I'll clarify some opinions there. But what I would like mostly is that patients help beginning homeopaths or doubting homeopaths who do a little bit of homeopathy to go on this road and to study or to become more experienced into this direction because of the request of patients. Yeah, let it happen from the bottom, from the grassroots, that this type of medicine is requested.
Absolutely. Amazing. Frederick, are you still taking on new clients or is it just your existing clients? And how can people get hold of you? And have you got a particular place that you prefer that they get hold of your books or any of your works?
As in many countries, the request, the demand for homeopathy is much, much higher than the number of homeopaths and the number of days and hours they have available.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I have a waiting list for the moment. It's January, so
okay.
6 months, 6 months. So I'm still seeing patients, but yeah.
So we need to figure out how to clone you.
Well, I'm trying. I'm trying very hard. Yeah, I'm trying very hard. And yeah, this one, if I may just say this at this moment, so I've been speaking about this whole idea, trying to motivate people to work in a certain way, to request homeopaths to go deeper into this art and science. And I've not been speaking about our projects, but I would just like to mention this website where you can find us as a tool maker to assist the homeopathic professionals to prescribe in this way. Yeah.
Yes, for anybody who's just listening and not on YouTube, it's radaropus.com. And I have been a Radar Opus, an evangelistic Radar Opus user since, like I said, 2011. I do not know what I ever would have done without it. And now that the new Adonis is out, which was it about May last year, Adonis came out, I think. It has completely revolutionized my practice. I have to share one little case with you. So I had a client recently that kept on saying that her depression is like a helmet on her head. And I just typed in, just for a joke, just typed in helmet in the search field because I just wanted to see what comes up. And there was one rubric in there. It said as if helmet, head as if helmet or something like that. And there was one remedy in there and it said Morion immersion. And when I saw immersion, I didn't know what Morion was, but I saw immersion. I thought, oh, it must be a crystal. So I looked it up and Morion is an alternative word for a helmet, but it's also smoky quartz. And this client has had the most unbelievable results with this particular remedy, but there's no way that would have, you know, I'm sure that wouldn't have been in the previous version, but since Adonis, all these new remedies are coming up, like all these crystals, all these butterflies are coming up. And I love that there are also families coming up. So arachnids will come up or Lepidoptera or like families will come up. So it won't just say these are the remedies, but this is the family that you should potentially go and look at. So Adonis, which just for our listeners that might not know, that's the new version of Synthesis, which is one of the repertories that you can get in Radar Opus. Now, I've got the full package of Radar Opus, so everything is in there. And you couldn't have enough lifetimes to actually go through all the information that's in there. Frederick has just popped up that up for us on the screen for those on YouTube. I have so much fun with Radar Opus, so, so, so much fun, and it's so easy to use. I will sometimes just go sit there and just scroll through the rubrics. And I have, you know, Patricia Hatherley's Lack book is in there, which I use quite often. I have Murphy in there as well. Synthesis is the main, Adonis is the main one that I always use, but I've got all the smaller books in there as well. I don't know what I would do without it. And it is, now that Adonis is there, it is so much fun. All these cool remedies are coming up that I love prescribing. I do have to constantly keep myself grounded because I am somebody that can get quite excited with all the shiny toys. But you know, if you prescribing something shiny and fun like Morion immersion or smoky quartz immersion, and it's working, the client has come back and said, for the first time, this helmet has lifted. Then it's not just me being airy fairy and trying to prescribe funny things. It actually worked. It's changed their life. Or if a butterfly is coming up now with Adonis, butterflies are coming up and you're prescribing that remedy and it's helping. It's just amazing. So I'm going to sound like a raving lunatic because I love Radar Opus so much. And I really particularly love Synthesis. So I can't thank you enough because it's the first thing every morning when I open my laptop, I open my email and then I open Radar Opus and then I open Facebook. But those are the three things that get opened first on my laptop every single day is my email and then Radar Opus without fail every single time.
Very nice to hear. Very nice.
I love it. Frederick, is there one final message that you want to leave our listeners with?
The listeners, the professional ones, I would like to say, carry on, carry on. Don't get discouraged. And for the patients, I would say, push them to work hard.
Sounds good. Amazing. I cannot thank you enough for your time. Like I said, you are just an absolute hero in my books. And I know you said one of the things of a homeopath is not to be, you know, somebody that doesn't do flattery and all that. I don't care. I'm going to flatter you all I can because you are a hero in my book. So thank you so much for all the work that you've done to make our job so much easier. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eugenie, for this opportunity. Thanks a lot. Really.
My pleasure.